Hello, I'm Ben Folds. Welcome to Arts Vote 2020. This is a space where we have the opportunity to hear from 2020 presidential candidates on the arts. The arts, something that isn't often included in the mainstream discussion, so we're grateful to our candidates for taking time out of their busy schedules to tell us how they intend to steer this very important national asset. And today we talk to presidential candidate Secretary Julian Castro. Secretary Castro impressed us with his strong command and knowledge of the economic impact of nonprofit arts organizations in America. And although Secretary Castro admits he'd never have a career in music, he strongly believes in the importance of the arts in attaining a quality education. My podcast homie, coming to us via the internet from the faraway land of Alaska, without whom I'd be lost, is former Senator Mark Begich. For the past 30 years, when I've been out touring and making records, seeing the impact of arts policy in towns across America on tour, it's people like Senator Begich, also former mayor of Anchorage, who have been doing the important work of making sure our arts are represented and funded and that everyone has access. So hello to Alaska. Hello, Mr. Begich.
Ben, it's always good to be on this series of podcasts that we have for presidential candidates and to our special guest. It's great to have Secretary Castro here, too. So I'm glad to be here. It is beautiful, sunny summer from the land of the midnight sun.
Nice. And I think it's raining where our guest is. So let's get to the important part. It's our guest. We are honored to welcome the Secretary Julian Castro. And he is phoning in from, San Antonio?
That's right, San Antonio.
Now, when we see these first Democratic debates coming up soon, we're going to be witnessing the most diverse group of candidates we've ever seen, all from different backgrounds, different histories, cultures. And it occurs to me that that's a way of celebrating what we have in common, and just as interestingly, how we're unique, as the art we grow up with is part of our identity. I mean, that said, I grew up white male and Southern, and I don't know any country songs. For me, it was R&B, British rock, and 19th century depressive Germans. But I couldn't help notice, Secretary Castro, that when I saw you talking about music that you love, I heard Bon Jovi, Jay-Z, Billy Joel, and a name stood out, an artist that you've cited a few times named Vicente Fernandez. I thought maybe you could tell us a little bit about what moves you about his music and what it means to you.
Yeah, and thank you very much, Ben, and thank you, Senator Begich, for having me on today on this podcast to talk about your subject, the arts, that are tremendously important in so many different ways to the cultural advancement of our country and the ability of folks to be able to reach their dreams and express themselves. But actually, one that we don't get to talk about often enough on the campaign trail, I look forward to doing that a little bit in the next few minutes. First of all, let me start off by saying that I would say I hardly have a bone of musical talent in my body. However, I do have plenty of appreciation for those who do have artistic and musical talent, and especially have a lot of appreciation, of course, for performers who have produced the music and other arts that I've grown up with. One of those was the singer that you mentioned, Vicente Fernandez. So I grew up in San Antonio, Texas, which is today about 60% Mexican-American. And it's always been this interesting blend here in Texas, especially South Texas, of folks from different parts of the world that came over the years, whether they're Mexicans, Spaniards, Germans, Irish, the French. And Vicente Fernandez is a Mexican mariachi singer, probably the best known of his generation. And growing up, you can imagine that whether out in the streets at fiestas or at backyard barbecues or birthday parties, or even in school, where one year in seventh grade, I studied as part of the curriculum, studied mariachi music, you'd always hear Vicente Fernandez. And I remember growing up with traditional songs like El Rey or Guadalajara. And to me, it was just fun music because it's generally, a lot of it's upbeat or some of it's reflective also. But it struck that kind of sentimental note about my culture of growing up as a Mexican American. And so through the years, you know, from when I was a kid. I've listened to a decent amount of it and listened to Vicente Fernandez. And it always, just like music often does, it takes you back to a certain place.
Right.
For me, that music takes me back to being a kid and growing up on the west side of San Antonio. Growing up with my grandmother, who would come over when she was 7 years old to the United States from Mexico, and often had Spanish telenovelas or Spanish music on.
Right. Did you play any musical instrument at all? You said you don't have talent for it, but do you have proof of this? Did you play music when you were a kid?
So I would say that I tried to play music. You know, in that mariachi class that we had, I remember that they assigned me to play the vihuela, which is a small instrument, string instrument. I guess I would describe it in layman's terms as sort of a small guitar-like instrument. And you know, I kind of started to learn a little bit of it, but never got very good. In fact, I was going to get my only F that I ever made in school in music until in the fifth grade, my homeroom teacher convinced the music teacher to give me an 83 instead of a 63. So I grew up with a tremendous appreciation. I just didn't have much talent on it.
Right. This is a vague line of discussion, but I think it's kind of important. The way that the arts, and we're going to get into the, you know, economic impact, and you spent time as a mayor and you've been on the ground and you know how effective it is for so many things. But just in terms of its symbolism, you know, with us all coming from different backgrounds and music as being sort of a unifier, the arts in general as being a unifier, how do you square that if you're the president with also the fact that everyone feels like they're the most important and their music is the most important? How do you look at a balancing act? Because I talk to a lot of people who seem to always be concerned that arts funding will go to someone else's arts and not theirs. What's your experience in this?
That's a great question. You know, I served as mayor of San Antonio for 5 years, and as part of the city's budget, and San Antonio is now the seventh largest city in the country. It has a budget of over $2 billion annual budget. We funded the arts. And I know what you're talking about. And you're right, whether it's at the local level like that or the national level, just like a lot of other types of funding, there's this this back and forth oftentimes among groups about what's getting funded and why is it getting funded and why am I not getting funded. I do think that when it comes to the arts, that we have a responsibility to make sure that our investments reflect the breadth and the diversity of experience in our country, and to try and harness that. And at the same time, recognize that whether it's music or it's other types of art, that has such an ambassadorial and unifying power to it. And by ambassadorial, I mean that oftentimes, music, for instance, just like food, is a way for people who may not have had exposure to a different culture.
Right.
You know, may never have thought about it, or sometimes even, you know, may have preconceived notions about somebody's culture.
Yes.
Or certain people, to actually begin to let their guard down and to learn and to become more appreciative. And so I think that they play a powerful role in bringing people together and in teaching us about one another. And that's why it's important that, you know, you not leave any group or sector out, but try and make investments in the arts that reflect that diversity. And especially, I think, look to the ones that are making the most effort to bring people into the fold.
Let me ask you, Secretary Castro, on a couple. I get the policy heavy questions. Ben's gets the good ones, but we'll weave back and forth here. But one I want to ask about, you know, NEA funding, the National Endowment for the Arts, every year seems to be a challenge, and they're about $155 million now per year funding from the federal government. You know, if we kept up with inflation, it would be more like $350 million in value that would be able to be out there. And we recognize the NEA's funding is not the end all to all arts, but it's a seed money that matches against, like you described, some of the local work you're doing and foundations and others. And so one of the ideas that has been kicked around to kind of equalize this and make it grow with the population is, why not create a formula for the NEA on a federal level that's a dollar per capita? Meaning right now we have about 340 or so million people. It'd be close to what it should have been inflation adjusted, but utilizing some sort of formula that people know that as the population grows, the economy grows, that the arts funding will in some way connect to it. What's your thoughts on funding for the NEA, and kind of what would you do as president, or what kind of direction would you see?
I believe in the power of the arts to both generate economic revenue. I've seen that at the local level in a city like San Antonio, which is one of the most culturally rich big cities in the country. And also, as I said, the power of the arts in education, in bringing people together. And as y'all have said, right now, I think, you know, we spend about 47 cents per capita, and yet the arts generate over $13 billion in federal tax revenue back to the Treasury. And so to me, that means that we should be investing in the arts because they bring people together, but also because it has a positive economic impact on the country. And I saw that at the local level. I believe that that's true at the federal level. And in this campaign, I've already started ensuring that we call for greater investment in the arts. When we released our education plan a few weeks ago, I specifically put into that plan a call for greater investment in arts and music education in our public schools. Because as y'all know, that's been one of the things that's gotten more and more cut out of public education as states have grappled with tighter budgets for local school districts. Their commitment in general to local school districts has gone down. So in the campaign, as we talk about education, as we go on and talk about jobs and opportunity and other plans, we're going to make sure to include an investment in the arts, because I do think that that kind of investment makes sense.
You made a good point there. And matter of fact, I think there's a report that was just done. I want to say it was maybe last week. I read about it or heard about it, and it talked about we're at one of the lowest levels of people who are going through education, K-12, receiving some sort of arts education, which is a significant, and it's been a significant reduction over the years, and you kind of hit it on the head. So supporting additional resources to the NEA, but also the one, and I think you led on to it through your education plan you've laid out, and that is, we like to say STEAM rather than STEM, science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. You started to expand a little bit, but can you tell us a little bit more? We, of course, believe that having the arts integrated with this education system of science, technology, engineering, math could create some unique opportunities. I know when I was a former mayor, I got the arts community and the engineering community together to help us design a road, which, of course, made the road much more appealing to the community and neighborhood rather than just a straight line plowing through everything. Can you give us a little more sense of how you would see education and the arts integrating, and also maybe a little bit on the preschool and education, your thoughts on that?
You know, study after study has shown that there's a relationship between exposure to arts education, whether it's music or some other type of arts education, and a student's success in school, that it has a positive impact on somebody's math studies and other studies that they do. And so I do see that as a real opportunity to make an investment in well-rounded students, and also to help ensure that our students do better in those subjects that we know more and more are ones that they're going to have to compete with students from around the world on, and that they're going to have to do well on so that America can be competitive in the years to come. So I think it makes sense not to forget that A, and to make it STEAM education and not only STEM education, and that it applies to people no matter where they're at, whether we're talking about pre-K. You know, we did something here in San Antonio called Pre-K for SA, and it was a ballot initiative to raise the sales tax by 1/8 of a cent to significantly expand high-quality full-day pre-K. part of the definition of that high quality pre-K was that they incorporated the arts and music into the curriculum. But just 2 days ago, I was in Iowa in Cedar Rapids, and I was talking to folks who launched a program of arts education to people who are incarcerated. And they were talking to me about the difference that this arts education program made, and specifically it was around choir music, but the difference that it had made to the incarcerated individuals that they'd had a chance to work with in their ability to open up to their family members that many of them hadn't visited with in a long time, their opportunity to see a more positive role for themselves and a productive path in life in the future. And so it had very concrete benefits to them. I guess the lesson that I take from that from a policy standpoint is that we can't forget about funding for arts education from the very beginning, starting in pre-K. And I've called for universal pre-K for 3 and 4 year olds, and including making sure that people who have often been forgotten about in our education system, like people who are incarcerated, also have the opportunity to benefit from arts and music education, because it has a positive impact on their lives too.
I'd like to add that music therapy, music and healthcare is often overlooked. And the more I learn about it, the more impressed I am with what it can do for autism, what it can do for stroke patients. And even if we remember when Gabby Giffords had a gunshot wound, and it was a music therapist that came in at the last minute and really got probably the most success getting her speech back. And it was a real science. And I'd love to see that more honored in the medical community and insured and universities accredited for music therapists, because I think we have a whole generation of kids who would love to study music therapy and use it for good.
You know, I do think that we have more people in everyday walks of life who are recognizing that power. And as you say, more students that want to go into fields, whether it's music therapy or similar ones, where they understand the power of that kind of approach to make a difference in people's lives.
You know, hopefully we're speaking to a lot of music fans as well, and people who I talk to who widely don't understand what the National Endowment for the Arts does and what the president's role is and what the executive and the Congress's role is in shaping what happens. And as I understand it, the states and local level, they're the ones that decide what agencies are going to take this money, because they're the ones that know it best, which is a fairly mainstream way to look at it. However, it appears to me that the president does have quite a say on what the priorities would be. And right now, it seems that one great priority is returning veterans, which is sort of almost a music therapy issue, and lower income festivals and arts activities in towns, which San Antonio could have benefited from. Do you have any special direction as president that you would send the NEA to with the power of persuasion that you will have in that office?
That's a great question. Well, number one, I think we need to get back to a time where the president leads in terms of championing the arts and doing so unabashedly. You know, I think of the Kennedy administration, at least how it's known now, compared to some other ones in recent times, and being willing to champion the role of the arts in society today, even when sometimes, as y'all have seen in decades past, the controversies come, and there are those who want to cut the budget and have this reactionary approach against the arts. So I would say, number one, my priority would be to champion the arts and just to stand up when those controversies come in defense of the value of arts funding. Secondly, I'm just convinced that the key to ensuring that we have kids who can achieve their dreams in this country is to start as early as possible with a great education. And so I would focus especially on the role of the arts, starting, you know, at birth from 0 to 5, and including in universal pre-K for 3 and 4 year olds, so that we amp up all that we can in terms of arts outreach, the work of nonprofits, and also arts education in our schools to make a difference during those early years. And as mayor, I saw the impact that this can make. I think if I had to identify right now what one of my focus areas would be with the arts, that would definitely be one.
One of the great challenges is, you know, how do we get more resources into the arts? And we've talked a little bit about it with the NEA and so forth, but there's tax policy that drives how consumers, taxpayers might participate in their government in whatever way they might see fit based on how they contribute. And right now, one of the big challenges is, and one of the positions that the focus has been on this program has been trying to figure out, can we modify the tax code to allow people, not just the ones who itemize deductions, but others who don't itemize, to create a fair playing field. So if you want to donate to the arts, that you can receive a, you know, tax benefit. You know, myself, my wife, we itemize, so we can receive some benefit. But, you know, other people in my family don't itemize. We know statistically when people are given an opportunity from a tax policy, they are able to give more and increase in donations to the arts, which then again gets leveraged out. Do you have any thoughts on tax policy and how it might drive investment by the taxpayer into the arts? And this is one of our issues, is how do we make sure that the policy is fair for everyone, not just those that itemize?
Yeah, you hit your nail on the head of something that is going to be very important in the years to come, sort of on so many levels, which is making sure that we have a tax code that is fair. And, you know, of course, out there, a lot of us are talking about the need to ensure that we have a tax code that rewards people who work, and not only wealth. It's also true that when we think about how we're going to make the progress that we need to make in this country, a lot of times we talk about the private sector and, of course, the public sector, but the nonprofit sector has an essential role to play in making that progress. So figuring out how we can make investment at an everyday level, you know, person to person, from family to family, an investment in the nonprofit sector that is doing such important work, how we can make that come about in a more convenient way, in a way that's more feasible for everyday families, make sense. And so, you know, I candidly haven't had an opportunity to review completely the idea that you've stated, but it's an intriguing one, certainly one that I consider worthy of thinking about, because I do think that we need to create a tax code that is fairer, and also one that invests in that nonprofit sector.
Well, first, thank you very much. We'd like to have you willing to look at this and see the opportunity for it, and your explanation was really good. I have a question for you, and I think you answered it earlier, and that is, I mean, you mentioned the arts as an economic driver. I've been to San Antonio. I've been on your Riverwalk as an example, where it's just like an activity every minute, it seems, down there. I mean, you see it firsthand. Do you think, in the discussion of the economy, if you were president, this is part of the equation? I know it's rarely talked about. That's why we're doing this podcast, is because we want people to talk about the arts, not only from their personal view, but how it can drive an economy if done correctly. I mean, do you want to elaborate just a tad on that? Then I got a kind of an interesting, fun question for you that we've been asking each candidate.
You know, this is where I think it helps that I originally, like you did, Senator, come from the local level of government, which is that I saw just the amazing local economic impact that the arts made for San Antonio. How many people came to visit the city to watch cultural performances or to see some of the, historically significant places in our city. I saw the way that events would drive visitorship and also local spending just among San Antonians, and the impact that had on our economy. And I think about the United States and as a whole, how many visitors come through cultural tourism to our country all the time? And then how much spending just among Americans is done in the arts and music, and how much that drives the economy out there? And the numbers are very clear that that's, for every dollar that we invest, it's returned many times over in our budget. And so I think one of the things that we need to do a better job of, and that's why I was glad to join this podcast, is telling that story, is just being as direct as possible about what kind of economic impact the arts make. And I think sometimes, you know, sometimes that we're not as unabashed with that, because we know that the arts are not only, the point of the arts is not only economic impact, it's so much more than that. Right? But that's definitely one part of the value of the arts. And it's one that I saw at the local level very clearly. And that as president, I would make the case for, and we fight for money in the budget to invest, whether it's in arts education or the NEA or other ways that we can ensure that we champion the arts in our country.
I was going to add, as the touring piano player, because when I advocate for the arts, I find what you're saying, which is, you know, for a musician, you expect that I'm going to make the case that it makes you feel good and it's, you know, good for the soul and those sorts of things. But I find that people listen when you tell them arts and culture in the U.S., that's all the arts, nonprofit, commercial, education, added $804 billion to the economy in 2016. That's more than transportation, tourism, or agriculture. And people consider it a small thing, but we don't do as much, I think, as we can to educate people on how important it is. When we say it impacts the economy, that's huge. 4.3 of the GDP is big stuff. I also wanted to just ask you, because you had mentioned starting from the youngest age and getting kids into the arts and making sure it's part of their life. And you have a brother that's, I guess, 1 hour younger or older than you. Did he get any of this musical talent?
Oh, he's one. Yeah, he's 1 minute younger than me.
One minute.
We're twins. He says I'm a minute uglier than he is, but it's not true. I'm a little older than he is. And I guess on that score, we're about the same. You know, both of us have a huge appreciation for and listen all the time to music and. But I think it's fair to say that neither one of us actually have much individual musical talent.
So let me ask you, Mr. Secretary, I love that answer because I have an older brother, not by 1 minute, but a year plus. And he is totally musically inclined, which meant maybe you just had to be a year apart or so. But now that you and I are probably similar in this aspect, that we're not very good when it comes to music, but I love all the arts. Here's the question. This is kind of a fun question. So let's assume you don't have to worry about anything in life, money, where you live, anything you want to do. What's the one artist or musician or actor that you would want to be and why? But that's so imagine you don't have to worry about anything. So you don't have to worry about paying bills. You don't have to worry about anything. So it's kind of like you get to have a renaissance moment. What is that person or group even that you'd want to be?
That is a great question. I mean, there's so much to choose from there. You know, my mind first goes to, you know, who wouldn't want to be one of the Beatles, right?
Is it the haircut kind of or is it
have
the
that
music?
Kind of, you know, stardom, that many people, fawning all over you and so forth. Something like that. But I also think of, one of my favorite singers is Joan Baez. And probably because I grew up with a mom who was a Chicana activist and always listening to Bob Dylan and Joan Baez. And I've always liked music that has that combination of course, beautiful voice and music, but also a meaning to it and that reflects something. So I think, you know, somebody like that, Bob Dylan, Joan Baez, combined with the stardom of the Beatles, if I could put it all together.
When you were younger, artists like Bob Dylan, Joan Baez, very political, very outspoken. Their music was often topical. You don't hear that very much anymore. I'm just curious, why do you think that is? And what do you think when, you know, what do you think about Shut Up and Sing, for instance? I mean, where's the line to you?
Well, you know, the Dixie Chicks, I think, did a fantastic job of articulating the frustration of the times back then in the mid-2000s. And it's interesting, you know, we're talking about music, but during those mid-2000s, I saw that time period, to talk about another form of the arts, as sort of this renaissance, this golden age of kind of progressive documentary cinema. You know, when you thought about Fahrenheit 9/11 and a few other films, of this sort of awakening of that, hey, what's going on here? And it's interesting that during this time of, I think, for a lot of people, waking up and saying, hey, what's going on in our country with this, you know, the leadership that we have? You know, I would think that in music, in theater, film, that we are going to see a spate of that kind of creativity. Because I know that we saw it in the mid-2000s to some extent. You mentioned, you know, Dixie Chicks, and then I think I noticed it back then more in film.
Right.
I can't say that I've quite seen that in the last couple of years, but I think it's definitely warranted. And there is something that I do believe we need to recapture about the you know, political awareness and the meaning that was imbued in a lot of the work of the late 1960s and the early 1970s.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that's a good point about another art form, documentaries, or could even be comedy or theater, that might come fill the void when one art seems to sort of get shut down in the way that a lot of pop artists had been in the 2000s.
Yeah, let me say first, Secretary Castro, so you mentioned Joan Baez and Bob Dylan. You should watch the new documentary called Rolling Thunder in your spare time. It's about their 75-76 concert tour, and you would fit right in with that group, I have this feeling. But also, on behalf of the American for the Arts Action Fund, we really want to thank you for taking the time out of, I know, a hectic, crazy, busy schedule, and in a rainstorm in Texas. So again, on behalf of the Action Fund, Americans for the Arts Action Fund, thank you very much. And I know we really appreciate you taking the time talking about your views on the arts and how they can impact a presidential race, but also how they can impact everyday lives.
Glad to do it. And thank you, Senator. And thank you, Ben, and to AFTA and all of the folks who make its advocacy possible. Truly appreciate it.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to subscribe today to the Arts Vote 2020 podcast series with Ben Folds on Anchor or any of your favorite podcast apps. Please go to artsactionfund.org/podcast for more info. That's artsactionfund.org/podcast. You'll get more info.